Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. Hi, this is Hope Gibbs with the Incandescent Radio Network. We are here today with Julie Morgenstern, who was dubbed the Queen of Putting People's Lives in Order by USA Today. She is also a New York Times bestselling author, having published numerous books that are reference guides featuring techniques and observations culled from her decades of experience as a consultant to individuals and companies. So we are so glad to have you here today with us, Julie.
It's great to be here.
So you are an efficiency expert known by many, many. We actually met you back in 2009, and you are our first Entrepreneur of the Month in Be Incandescent Magazine, the month we launched in January 2010. So we have a lot of respect and appreciation for you. We most recently bumped into you at the Professional Businesswomen Conference in California, where you were doing a breakout session. So let's talk a little bit about some of the advice that you have for women in particular. At the conference, you said you believe that women want meaningful work, home, and personal lives, which I'm sure we can all agree. So how do we get there in terms of organizing ourselves?
Well, you have to basically, you know, sort of look at all aspects of your life that need to be organized. There's physical space and information, right, that could be keeping you from being able to access what you need when you need it in your home or your professional life. There's your time and how you're allocating your time and what you're investing your time in, and making sure that those activities that you are spending your time on in your personal and professional life are connected to your big picture goals. And that really means not getting caught up in, you know, other people's urgencies or other people's priorities if they don't align with your priorities. So very often there's a win-win between what people want from us and what our own goals are, but you need to always identify that point of connection. And if someone's asking you to do something or you're getting pulled in a direction that feels counter to what is most important to you, you need to really look at that and develop some strategies to make sure you stay on your point, on your purpose. And then there's the digital lives, you know, which is sort of a weird crossover between our physical and our time. You know, digital is its own dimension, really. And I find a lot of people getting caught up in that right now because we're in a weird tipping point about that. So, you just sort of have to kind of survey your life and figure out what's working and what's not, and start zeroing in on the areas that are not working and retool your life.
So clarity, self-clarity, and self-realization seem to be the center point for that and almost everything else that we want to change in our lives. Tell us a little bit about that tipping point. What do you mean by that?
The tipping point of digital, and I feel like we're, you know, at a point where people are starting to understand technology better. And the ways in which mobile technology can help you, but you're not stuck having to only do things digitally. I think for many, many years it was, you know, there was a push-pull. There were people who were early adopters and people who were really resistant. And I think the world was somewhat divided that way. But now I actually feel that we get it a little bit better. We understand it more. And as a result, we're able to use it more as a tool. One of our tools, sometimes it's the majority tool, sometimes it's just, you know, an accessory, and we're figuring out how to really integrate it so that we're not led by technology, but we're actually leading it. We're using it to our advantage where it works, and we're releasing it where it doesn't. So, you know, we were, I don't know, with calendars, et cetera, there's, you know, so many digital possibilities, but even with all those, there are many people, even very digitally agile people, who prefer to write their to-dos or their notes by hand, and they're choosing to do that. And then other, you know, there's just many different possibilities. So I think there's a knowledge, a comfort, and now we're starting to use it more to our advantage, be more selective in our use of technology.
Makes sense. I'm one of those list people. I like to write them down so that I can cross them off and throw away the paper.
That doesn't mean you're a Luddite.
No,
your brain works. It's the way the brain works. I think people are starting to get that.
Yeah, and I don't really care what anybody else thinks. That's how it works for me. Though. So that leads us to our next question, which you were talking about at the PBWC conference, about the dangers of opting for the small and easy. What exactly does that mean, and how can women and men avoid this trap?
Well, I think when we are staring down the barrel of a very overwhelming to-do list or set of choices and conflicting priorities, which I think is somewhat the state of the world of work right now. You're just always seeming to be facing conflicting priorities. So many things to do, they all seem equally important, don't know what to do. When we're in that state of overwhelm, we very often prioritize based on, let me just get a bunch of small, easy things done before I get to the big, important stuff. Or, you know, let me just check my email first before I dive into that difficult piece of writing or report or reading or conversation I have to have. And when you tackle the small and easy before you get to the big and important, although it feels in the moment like you're going to get a false sense of accomplishment or some sense of accomplishment, it's in fact a very false sense of accomplishment. And it pushes off the really big important things. They get further and further away from you throughout the day, and that actually has a kind of a time cost. Your energy slows down. You feel like this thing hanging over your head, and whatever you're working on, you're not really fully present because you're aware of that thing you've been putting off. So you really want to flip your thinking and find a way to really identify quickly what is truly the most important thing to do in this moment. And tackle it first, and then move on to the next. And don't base it on the size of the task or the ease of the task, but the value against your goals.
And that's great advice, and it leads us to the other thing that you were talking about at the conference, about dancing close to the revenue line to evaluate what is coming to you. Explain what that means and how we can use that idea in our lives.
Your greatest value, whether you are an entrepreneur or you work for a company in any role in any industry, your greatest role, every worker's greatest role or value, lies in your ability to generate revenue for your company or save your company money. And there is not a single employee in any company anywhere whose position does not tie to the revenue line of that business in some way. And you need to understand how your job fits into your company's financial health. And when you do, then you can start measuring all of your options against, you know, how close is this to the revenue line? How, you know, what, why they're investing in me? What am I paid to produce? What is it that I do that helps keep this company financially healthy? And when you think in those terms, you'll quickly find what really counts, what really matters to your company, to your boss, to your employer, to yourself. And if you dance close to the revenue line, you'll keep your company in business as long as is humanly possible in today's economy. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are industries that are struggling, and there's lots of downsizing going on, but the people who tend to stay till the end are the ones that dance close to the revenue line. They get it. They get how their daily activities connect to the business goals of the company.
Excellent. Tell us about something else that I was fascinated by when you were speaking, the 3 Qs and the 4 Ds, and how we can prioritize using this approach. What does that mean?
So there's, you know, the 3 Qs are 3 questions that you can ask when you're facing kind of conflicting priorities. So there's 3 questions you should ask of every choice on your plate. One, question number one is, how long will it take? You know, how long is this call, this project, this, not, and I don't mean like it's going to take 3 months. I mean, you know, a step in a process. How long is this email going to take me to write? How long is this article going to take for me to read? How long will this conversation really take? So how long will it take is question number one. Question number two is, what's the return on investment for that time? And there are certain things that when you look at how long they take, and you measure it against the return on investment for that time, you may realize this is not a good use of time. And the best example that I can give of that is if you're in any kind of customer service business, there are certain customers or clients who take up an enormous amount of time but bring you very little business, right? They're just known as the high maintenance. Same is true of employees. There are certain employees that take up a massive amount of time, but they're underperformers, and you spend an hour and a half talking to them, and they barely make a shift. They barely make a change. So when you start looking at the math of your activities and to-dos and tasks and choices, and you measure the return on investment against that time, it leads you sometimes to making better choices. And rather than, let me just deal with this troublesome employee who just get it annoying me, and you spend a couple of hours, you may actually direct your energy to a couple of high-performing employees that haven't come to you with any problems, but you know if you bring them an idea, they're going to take it and run with it. And so you readjust the way you spend your time. So those are two of the three questions. And most of your decision-making should happen around those two questions. The third question is what I consider a tiebreaker question, which is, what's the deadline? So if you have two things that are 15 minutes with a high return on investment, it helps you choose which one do you do first. You do the one that's due first, do you know? So that's the three questions, and it's just a matrix to help you decide where to start when you don't know where to start, with all things of great value. And the four D's are a way to streamline your to-do list, because when you do the math and the three Q's, you're going to find out you have more stuff to do than time to do it, always. You will always have more to do than time to do it. So rather than ignore the excess and hope it will go away, you can take a proactive approach and cut down that to-do list, cut down those commitments very proactively, so you're just left with what you really will execute, and the rest has been taken away. So the four D's are four things you can do to take things off your to-do list. You can delete them if they don't have enough value for the time invested. You can delay them, which is to actually schedule it for a more appropriate time when you can get it done more quickly. So don't try to, you know, tackle a big writing task at 6 o'clock at night if you're exhausted, or 4 o'clock in the afternoon if your brain is not moving very quickly at that time. You can delegate things. You can give them to somebody else to do who might be the more appropriate person to do it. And you can diminish things, which is to find a quicker, more efficient way to get the same thing done. And, you know, taking the four D's to your to-do list every day or to any moment where all of a sudden, you know, the ground shifted and there's a big opportunity or there's a big crisis or whatever, you just can always come back to the math and the four D's. How long is this all going to take? And then delete, delay, delegate, and diminish, and get it down to what you can manage and execute on.
What great advice. I love that. And it's so easy to remember. So talk a little bit about how you got into this business and how effective these strategies are for you. So let's take the first question first. How did you get into becoming the queen of putting people's lives in order?
Well, I've been in the business for about 23 years, and I just, you know, understood the frustration of disorganization, and there's something you really want to do. There's a contribution you want to make. You've got talents and skills you want to bring to the party, and you just can't find your keys, or you can't find the business card, or you don't have a working pen, or you can't get dressed in the morning because you can't find the suit or the skirt or the jacket you wanted to wear. So I really understood that frustration, and I started the business to really tame the chaos in people's lives so that they were free to make their unique contribution. And just basically started, and it's just grown over the years through all the client activity and referrals, et cetera.
Yeah, you've gotten tons of national press on Oprah and tons of other places. So what does your closet look like? You must be the most organized person in the planet.
I'm a very organized person, but I'm not obsessively, I think it's important for people to really recognize that organization is a dynamic process. You set up a system, and then when your life changes or things change or your taste changes or, you know, in your pantry, what you're eating changes, your food style changes, like it changes. And so there are moments of chaos during any moment of change or at the point where, oh, wow, change just happened. I used to eat, used to eat brown rice and found out I'm allergic to it or something like that. And so all your brown rice products have to come out, but it may take a year till you realize that. So it's, you know, I'm organized, but I'm not like militant, and I just don't want anybody to think that I, you know, there's some purist state. I can find what I need when I need it. I feel good in my spaces. And I think that that's really the true definition of being organized. But what it looks like from one person to another, and is it always perfect? No, you should not set that expectation, because it really doesn't reflect what organization is really there to do, which is to support you in your goals. And your goals can change, or your activities can change, and then you have to redo your system.
Well, that's great wisdom. I love that. And I love the idea of not being perfect. We've talked about, Lisa McLeod wrote Forget Perfect, and Lee Woodruff wrote Perfectly Imperfect, and I gravitate to those ideas because I think that as women especially, that we're told that we're supposed to be perfect and we battle it, but yet there's a part of us that thinks that that's the case. So it's great to hear that you definitely don't stand for that idea, but being organized is a different approach to life where you can find what you're looking for when you need it, which is, that's a gift to all of us, I think.
Yeah, that's a good way to live.
It's a good way to live. So last question before we let you go. You talked at the conference about stretching time. What is the secret to that, and what do you mean by that idea?
So basically stretching time, like we all feel when you're really busy and when you approach your days in a kind of a chaotic, last-minute, unplanned fashion, you just sort of wake up and take things as they come, or you have a to-do list or a plan, but you never look at it because you're hyper reactive. You just don't plan. It can feel like time just flies by, and you don't, you know, time just slips through your fingers. And you can really stretch time in a variety of ways, which is where it feels like, wow, I have all the time I need. I have all the time in the world. And there's a few, many techniques, and, you know, my book, Never Check Email in the Morning, is just filled with strategies for stretching time and many different techniques to do it. But what I would offer here is probably one, which is to end every day. This is a really simple change that you can make. But if you end every day by planning tomorrow plus two, which is look at what's on your plate for tomorrow, your appointments, your meetings, your to-dos, your calls, everything you want to achieve in the day, everything you intend to achieve for the day, your plan for the day. If you do it at the end of the day for the next day, and then look 2 days beyond that, kind of always have a three-day arc. Always see what's coming over the next 3 days, always. But do it at the end of a day, not in the morning. Don't make the mistake of waking up and looking at your to-do list and your calendar and say, hey, what's on my plate today? It's way too late if you wait until the morning. But if you end every day with that three-day arc, you will find that you will mentally prepare for the performance of the next day. Wow, tomorrow's going to be a tough day, or tomorrow's going to be, oh, wow, I have a big chunk of time in the afternoon. What am I going to do with it? Or, whoa, I don't have any space between my meetings. Where am I going to, you know, when am I going to stop to sort of execute on any of the follow-ups from those meetings? Like, you can anticipate your performance, and when you prepare, at least mentally, and often then you can prepare physically with the information, you'll find that your day will go much better, and you can be fully present rather than just sort of in one thing and terrified, what's coming next at me. And I think that's a really powerful way to expand your sense of your days. And you have enough time to do what you need to do.
That sounds wonderful. It sounds like the more organized you are, the more in control of your choices you are. And that seems like an undercurrent for your work. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I think it is, you know, the thing that reduces stress for humans, and every study that's been done about stress, is ultimately enabling people to feel in control. When we feel in control of our lives, our stress goes down. When we feel out of control, our stress goes up. And there's so much of life that you can't predict, even on a daily basis, stupid little things that will come at you. So it behooves all of us to be as organized as we can with the things that we know so that the only unknowns we're dealing with are coming from the outside. It's not coming from our own internal system. And just by doing that, your stress level will go down. You'll feel in control, and you'll be ready for the surprises, more ready for the surprises.
It sounds like a great way to live. We are here with Julie Morgenstern. Thank you so very much for your time. It was a pleasure to see you in California, and we look forward to staying in touch.
Very good. Thanks, Hope.
You're welcome. This is the Incandescent Radio Network. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.